Welcome back, Jimmy B and TC. Brinson off on Good Friday as he needs another holiday. But our next guest, he has no holidays. He's working all the time. He's Gary Rima, the fine voice of the UNI Panthers. You hear UNI football and basketball right here on 1700. Glad to have him aboard here today. What's happening, Gary?
Well, you know what? Usually when basketball gets over, life can slow down just a little bit. But ever since I started up this minor league basketball team in Waterloo, it just goes from one season to the next.
Yeah.
But you know me, TC, I love being busy. We got an exhibition game tomorrow that we're getting ready for. Our season opener's a week from Sunday at home. So kind of running around a little bit crazy here this week, but having some fun and, you know, just enjoying life like you. I mean, get to talk sports every day on the radio and really enjoy covering UNI athletics, you know that, and find a little bit of free time to. My wife and I got to Vegas for about 4 days during her spring break, so that was a nice little getaway. So yeah, things are good with me, I can tell you that.
Well, certainly the season ended a little bit earlier than you wanted in the basketball floor this year. You and I got off to that nice start, had the win against NC State down there in the battle for Atlantis, win against SMU. Things were looking good, but end of the non-conference, gets beat by Iowa State, get beat by Xavier, and just that slow start again in the MVC. You got to figure Ben Jacobson and the coaching staff, one of the things of the offseason they're going to talk about is what's happened the last couple of years, digging themselves such a big hole at the beginning of conference play and how to combat that.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting because everybody felt so good about this. Even though we lost those last couple of non-conference games, and against, you know, I think, certainly solid programs. Iowa State didn't have the year they wanted, but they were still a talented team. Injuries really hurt them. Everybody saw how good Xavier was, yeah. And I thought we played them pretty competitively. But you're right. I mean, we had some really good non-conference wins, from SMU to knocking off North Carolina State and taking down UNLV and UT Arlington. I mean, there were some, we actually played Villanova pretty well,
yes,
in the third game in 3 days out at the Battle for Atlanta. So yeah, everybody was really feeling good going into the Missouri Valley Conference season and thought, you know what, we're going to be a contender. We're going to be right there. But man, it just, we really struggled out of the gate, lost that home opener to Southern Illinois, and they proved to be a better team. But I think by the end of the year, we still were the better team than them. And then we go to Bradley and lose, and they're improved. But you know, you start 0-5 in this league, you're behind the eight ball. You know, Panthers survived it a year ago and got to 9-9 and a 3 seed. But, you know, first time ever under Coach Jacobson, we had to play on Thursday night at the conference tournament and what they call the play-in games in the 8-9. And, you know, it was good to get that win. And you know, we played Loyola as tough as anybody did at the conference tournament, losing by 4 and had a chance to take the lead late in that game with the 3. So, you know, it was kind of a season that we just missed. We just missed having the kind of year that everybody thought we might be able to have, and that's always frustrating. And you know, it's back to back years for Coach Jacobson that didn't go as well as they would have liked. But I think this program's on the upswing and is definitely going to be a team to be reckoned with in the very near future with the recruits that are coming in, the guys that are coming back. I still think UNI Panther basketball is on solid ground and going to be exciting moving forward.
Look to be in good shape, and it certainly helps bringing in a top 100 recruit in A.J. Green. And him making his way in, playing for Dad Kyle Green, the assistant coach over there, it's going to be fun. Now, a part of that was we saw a transfer that happened. Juwan McLeod, the incumbent point guard, made the decision he's going to probably go closer to home and finish up his collegiate career after a redshirt year. But, you know, Juwan McLeod, you saw flashes of brilliance, but just it felt like, at least to me, never had the consistency you were hoping for.
Yeah, and that was part of it. It just and it's interesting, TC, because I watched him this last summer in the primetime league, and I know there's not collegiate level defense played. The guys, even the Iowa guys, the UNI guys, yeah, they'll play defense, but it's not like they're going to see when you get into the guts of your college season. It's a more offensive minded league, the summer leagues. But Juwan looked really good. Every game I saw him play, he was putting up big numbers, and it wasn't just, you know, wide open shots or driving layups. He looked good shooting the contested three. He looked good at the pull-up jumper. I think offensively coming into this season, I think even he thought that he was going to be much better and a much bigger factor at the offensive end. And you saw that at the Battle for Atlantis. If you remember, he was instrumental in driving the ball to the hole and scoring and driving and dishing and doing some really good things. And then for some reason, he lost his shooting touch. We got into the season and into the conference part of our season, and some teams are just sagging off him, just daring him to shoot the basketball. And at this level, you've got to have five scores on the floor, or they're going to be able to do that to you defensively. And then the back injury slowed him down, didn't play the last six games. I think with A.J. Green coming in, he kind of looked at the situation and said, well, here comes a top 75 recruit. He's at my position. He's a great shooter. He's going to play. I mean, you're not going to hold A.J. Green out. That's the highest recruited player to ever come to the University of Northern Iowa. And I'm not saying he's just going to be handed a starting spot, but man, he's going to play. He's going to contribute. And you've got Wyatt Lowhouse coming back and Spencer Haldeman and Taiwan Pickford and Isaiah Brown. And maybe he just thought, you know, I need a little change of scenery. Wish him the best. The word is he's looking at UW-Milwaukee, maybe Marquette, but he does want to get closer to home, and that happens. But it doesn't happen a lot under Coach Jacobson. I think I can count on one hand the number of guys in his 12 years that have come to UNI, played for a year or so, and then transferred out. It just doesn't happen a lot. But, we wish Juwan the best, and even with him leaving, I think with the guys coming in, and the returning players, and two scholarships still to work with now. Don't forget that. They still got two scholarships to work with for this next season. I think we got a chance to be a pretty special team, I think, next year.
Guard court looks very good, very impressive what they have in that back court. But up front, the question marks remain. And after the graduation of Bennett Cook, he'll be moving on. Obviously, what we saw out of Clint Carlson, even Ted Freeman, who gave some good minutes at times. It's going to be up front and what they can find there. Austin Fife saw a little bit of playing time. They've already picked up a commitment from a guy coming in from junior college. And Biggie Goldman, what a name.
Yeah, love it, love it. 6'9" kid. And in talking with some of the UNI staff, he's a guy that sounds like could play the four, but he's really good in the center position too, can really score the basketball. A 6'9" kid that'll be right there with Austin Fife, I think, at that five position. And at times, I think they can play those two guys together. The biggest concern when you bring a guy like that in, TC, isn't what he's going to do at the offensive end. It's who's he going to guard at the defensive end. And in our league, let me look at Loyola. Their four-man this year was Dante Ingram, an undersized four-man. So is this guy going to be able to guard a 6'4", 6'5", guy? Maybe not. But there are some teams that will play a 6'7", 6'8", kid at the four. And then you might see Fife and Goldman on the floor together. But it helps us immediately where we need help, and that's in the front line. And you touched on it. When you lose Bennett Cook, Clint Carlson, and Ted Friedman all in the same season, you lost three guys that were giving you two of them starters, and Teddy Boy was getting to play a little bit more as the season wore on. But I tell you, look for Austin Fife to take a big jump a year from now in his game. I think next season you're going to see a much better and more confident and consistent Austin Fife. I think he can do along the lines what Cameron Krutwig is doing for Loyola. I think Austin's that type of player. In fact, back when those two guys were in high school, the UNI coaching staff was recruiting both of those guys. And Fife committed first, and that's why Austin Fife is here. And the Panthers then kind of stepped away from Krutwig, and he ends up at Loyola. Drop some weight, and man, what a freshman year he's having. But I do think with these two scholarships that they have to work with, I think they'd like to try and find one more guy that can come in and be an impact player right away, especially at that four position. Maybe it's a 6'6", 6'7", type kid. And then I think they're going to look for a really good high school player that's still out there, that's still available, and fill those two scholarships that way. But You know, they still think Luke McDonald can give them some good minutes. I can see Luke helping at the four. They're still talking Justin Dahl, and he'll be a junior next year. He's a big guy. He's a big man. He's still a little raw, but I think they think he might be able to give them some minutes in that post area next year too. So the cupboard's not bare, and they're starting to replenish it, but they still got a little bit of work to do, I think, to finalize that roster to be as deep and as good as we want to be.
You mentioned Luke McDonald, and I have always really liked his game, and just had plenty of DNP coaches' decisions out there during the course of the season after playing a lot more early on. Just what happened, do you think? Why the minutes deplenished for him? And you're right, I think he could be a big key of what they can do next season up front.
I think he just got buried in the depth chart. And you know, early on, the coaches played Ted Friedman. Some you knew Bennett Cook and Austin Fife and Clint Carlson were going to get their minutes in that 4-5 position. And then it was who was going to be that next guy that would step in and be that backup guy. And Ted Friedman was playing good enough that it kept Luke McDonald also behind him. And there were games where Clint Carlson was playing 30-plus minutes. I mean, he logged a lot of minutes in some games this year, so there weren't a lot of minutes to be had at that four position, and I think that's where they think Luke can help them the most. It's hard for him to guard a three, and it's interesting because when Luke did get some opportunities, he did some pretty good things. He hit some shots, he got some rebounds, he kept some balls alive on some rebound attempts, and so I think Luke just needs another year in the weight room, work on his strength, work on his conditioning, but look for Luke McDonald to be a factor next year, and it's probably going to be in a coming-off-the-bench type role. He'll battle in the drills to be a starter, but Luke's got a definite shot to really help this team. It's almost, he's not the same type of player, TC, but it's along the lines of kind of what I could see Marvin Singleton's career, how that went. If you remember, Marvin played very little his redshirt freshman year, not his sophomore year, and then midway through his junior year, coach inserts him into the starting lineup, and he plays so well he can't take him out, and he starts every game of his senior year and just ended up having a great career. But he just had to stick with it, keep getting better, keep learning the offense, be a, you know, Jake wants you to be a good defensive player, and that was never a problem for Marvin, but that's an area Luke's got to keep getting better at. So I'm with you. I think Luke McDonald's got a chance to play a much bigger role next year in that 2018-19 season.
So the story still continues this year, though, for Loyola. And, well, I said it after the tough quarterfinal loss for the Panthers. I told everybody on my programs that you and I was going to give them the best game they were going to see the whole tournament, and that proved to be the case. I thought they had a chance to make a Sweet 16. Never envisioned this, though, Gary. For the second time in six seasons, we got an MVC team in the Final Four. Take us down the path of Loyola, what you got to see out of them this season in the three meetings and just this run that they're continuing on.
Just a great team effort, and I know sometimes that gets overused, but I'm telling you, when I remember some of the great UNI Panther basketball teams, that 2010 team that made it to the Sweet 16 with Ali Farouk-Manesh and Kajoa Heligba and Adam Cook and Lucas O'Rear and company. Those guys, they didn't care who scored. They were a team. They played together. They really, really liked each other. I mean, it was so fun to be around those guys. I saw the same thing Seth Tuttle's senior year with that team, with him and Matt Bohannon and Paul Jesperson and Wes Washburn. Those guys were cut from the same mold. They just were a great team. Weren't a bunch of individuals, and that's the one thing that needs to be said first about this Loyola team is that just great teamwork. I love their offense, their motion offense. They run it as well as anybody in the country. Unselfish players. But I think the thing that gets lost a little bit when people talk about Loyola is what a great defensive team they are. They were one of the best defenses in the league behind what the Panthers did defensively. And that to me, that's been a big part of why they're where they're at. I think of the best UNI teams, the great runs they had. UNI had great defensive teams, defended people the way they didn't want to be defended. And that's exactly what Loyola's doing. And they're doing it with an undersized lineup. And in some of their NCAA tournament games, they didn't even have a center on the floor. They didn't have Krutwig on the floor. They were going with a four guard and a forward lineup with Dante Ingram having to play down inside and guard the other team's big. But great pack line team type defense. And they're well coached. Porter's an excellent coach. He always has his team well prepared. And hey, they got God on their side. They got Sister Jean on their side. I mean, you know, there's something magical going on with that team. But the other thing is, they don't have to rely on one or two guys to be successful. Look at what they've done in the NCAA tournament. Dante Ingram hits the big shot one game. Clayton Custer hits the big shot another game. Marcus Towns gets the big one in the next. I mean, they have so many weapons. They're deep that way to where they don't have to rely on, hey, if a team shuts down this guy and this guy, that team's going to struggle. You cannot do that with Loyola. You got to guard them all. And I think the X factor from a year ago for them, at least in the three games they played us and watching them win our tournament, is the freshman center Cameron Krutwig. Mm-hmm. He was their missing piece. He was what they were missing from a year ago. They didn't have that inside player that defended at a decent job, but was a good scoring threat, could run the floor with those four guards or three guards and small forward. It was the missing link, and they found him, and he's had a, you know, freshman of the year in the league, and he's just had a great season. But they've been fun to watch, and you know, I know a lot of people are saying, well, the end of the road's probably going to come tomorrow against Michigan, but I just tell people don't bet against them, because you may have thought that against Miami or Tennessee or whoever they faced, but and TC, I think also, the stars align for them. I mean, look at their route that they took. All of a sudden, they get to the Elite Eight, and they get a 9 seed in Kansas State, mm-hmm. a team that was picked to finish, what, 8th in the Big 12? I mean, it just fell perfectly for them this year. They didn't have to beat a 1 or a 2 seed to get there. But, you know, hey, it doesn't matter how you do it. You just got to win every game in front of you. And it'd just be tremendous if they just kept this thing going. And I hope the committee takes a little bit of look at this and you know, looks at maybe next year at some of those teams that had a really good record in a mid-major type league, a non-power six league, and gives a few more of those teams a chance to have this run, because the word was, if Loyola didn't win the Valley tournament, they weren't getting into the dance. Yep. And I think we're all seeing now, TC, that they are, whether they would have won the Valley tournament or not, they are very deserving of being in the dance, and anybody can get upset in a postseason conference tournament over 3 days.
It's, and something that I certainly would like to see, and just the way that things are stacked against the mid-majors, and it shows you. And, hey, you know, those conversations when Wichita made the decision to leave the death knell of the MVC, maybe your people were a little bit out of whack on that one too, huh?
Yeah, good point. You know, and it's, it's interesting. And I, you know, loved having Creighton in the league, and Creighton did some great things and great crowds and really good teams. But isn't it interesting that Loyola is the team that replaced the Creighton Blue Jays in the Valley, and Loyola has done in the Valley what Creighton was not able to do, yeah, as a member, and that's get to the Final Four. So, I mean, and you know, there were a lot of people when Loyola was brought into the league, they're like, really? That you know, Loyola, they don't have a big fan base. They don't have a great arena. Are you kidding me? Hey, TC, you can go all the way back to when the UNI Panthers were brought into the Missouri Valley Conference in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And some of the teams, Bradley, and some of the teams that have been in the league forever, like, what? UNI, they play in a big football stadium for their home games and not much fan support. They're not very good. Basketball's not important. Why do we have them? Well, look what the Panthers have done. And now look what Loyola's done. And I'm telling you, I think Valparaiso will be another team that'll, now that they figured out how tough the league is, how good the league is, they'll step it up. And this isn't the Horizon League, and it's been interesting because their coach even said that. He goes, these teams really prepare for you in the Valley, because they're calling out our plays that we're going to run before we even run them. He says, we got to step it up, and they will. So I think the Valley's going to be all right. I really do.
Yeah, we can throw a little shade at Creighton now. I mean, you talk about overrated programs. You mentioned Final Four. They haven't even been to a Sweet 16 in recent history. I mean,
you got to
go back to the early 70s. So that those Blue Jay fans, they annoyed me all the time in St. Louis. They still annoy me to this day. Your program is not nearly as good as you think it is.
There you go.
All right. Before we let you run, right now, happening over on the UNI campus, Gary, is spring football. What can you tell us? What's going on with the guys on the gridiron and what you're seeing out there in the field? What, a 5 a.m. practice to kick it off? What's Farley doing?
I got to be honest with you. I missed that 5 a.m. practice on Wednesday. I did. I wasn't there. But they were supposed to practice on Monday, but with the way the weather and stuff happened, they ended up moving their first day of spring drills or spring practice to Wednesday morning at 5. So they've only had one workout so far, workout number 2 today. But they're a team that this spring, that they're moving some guys around. They're trying to figure out that they've already moved Hezekiah Applegate from the defensive line to the offensive line to see if he can fit in there, to see if that's where they want to have him. This is kind of like experimental time for Coach Farley. I think he loves this time of the year, by the way. They took Matthew Vanderslice, a big 6'7", 260-pound tight end, put some more weight on him, and he's now at a tackle. He's working at tackle, kind of the Austin Howard route of being a lineman for the UNI Panthers. They're working Trevor Allen and Christian Jagan at a safety spot right now with the loss of Malcolm Washington and Elijah Campbell from the secondary. They're testing some things out this spring to kind of see where guys need to be. And by the time next fall rolls around, some of those guys may be back on the other side of the football. But Coach Farley really talking a lot about the offensive line. That, you know, with the loss of our center Lee Carhart, big spot to fill there. Bryce Sweeney is gone, and also Jacob Appleman, who could have come back and played his senior season, has opted to not come back. He's going to graduate this spring and step away from football. So they got some spots to fill in the O-line, and that's a big focal point. But the defensive side, there's a lot of work to be done on defense, too, with the guys we lost there. But getting Bryce Douglas back, he got a sixth year in the defensive line. And with him anchoring the center of that defensive line and Ricky Neal back and Seth Thomas and Marcel Minifield and Bronte Wells, I think in time Coach Farley will have the defense in great shape by the time the season rolls around next year. But it's a little bit of experimental time right now, and they're just trying to figure some things out through these 15 practices in the spring game.
So, I mean, you look forward a chance of getting back to the playoffs, you'd have to assume this year. You know, you and I and Coach Farley has certainly built that, and that's the expectation every year. Who else is going to be good? Is state same old, North Dakota State, South Dakota State, the ones to watch out for?
Well, you got to figure the Missouri Valley Football Conference title is going to go through North Dakota State. I mean, defending national champions again, won it all. They just reload. And South Dakota State, I think, will be really good again. You got to keep your eye on teams like Southern Illinois and Western Illinois. I think those programs are trying to get back to the heydays. But South Dakota's kind of reared their head up there and decided they're going to start getting after it. But I like UNI's conference schedule this year, TC. This is the year that we get North Dakota State, and we also get South Dakota State at home. Youngstown State is on our schedule, and, you know, they're always going to be tough. But one of the big concerns right now is the Panthers are still trying to fill an 11th date, and they're trying to get a FCS opponent so that you got 11 opportunities to get FCS wins and get yourself playoff eligible if you don't win the Missouri Valley Conference regular season title. And they're still, scouring the states to find a team to play in week 2 of the regular season in a non-conference game, and they've already got a game at Iowa and at Montana, so you're trying to find somebody to come in. So that's a definite concern right now. But when you look at the league, top to bottom, you know, I even think the Missouri State Bears and teams like that are going to be better, but just are they going to be good enough to take that step to get up into the upper half of the league? That's the challenge, because you know that UNI, North Dakota State, South Dakota State, Youngstown State, Illinois State, they're not going to get worse. They're going to try, they're going to be getting better and better also. So the league will be tough as ever, without a doubt. And if you can get out of this league and get into the playoffs, you have a legitimate shot to win it all.
Good stuff. Gary Rima, the voice of the UNI Panthers. Gary, great catching up with you as always. Really appreciate you giving us some time here today. And baseball season's also back. You're a big baseball game. World Series or bust for your Cubbies?
Oh, man, we're going back. TC, we're going back to the big dance. You know, the way the Cubs looked yesterday in the opener, what a way to start the year. First pitch, boom, home run, Ian Happ. I think the Cubs are loaded. They stay healthy. No problems. I think they can make it back to the World Series and have a great shot to win it all. It's just been fun to see this Cubs team do what they've done the last couple of years. And I think Joe Maddon's going to get them back there. I'll just first guess it. I know I'm not going out on a huge weak limb, but I'll first guess it and say you'll see the Cubs back in the World Series in the fall.
I'm hoping you're right. I'm hoping it's against my Minnesota Twins. I'd sign up for that right now.
Fun. Oh, that'd be awesome. Hey, by the way, my son that lives in Florida surprised his little 9-year-old son, woke him up yesterday morning, had 2 tickets to the game, and they drove to Miami and took in opening day live and in person.
Wow.
A couple of diehard Cub fans themselves. I mean, that father-son deal in baseball, there's nothing like it, TC.
No doubt about it. Gary, is always good catching up with you. And I guess go Ramblers tomorrow night. You're rooting for them, right?
You bet. Yep. Porter Mosier and company. Let's just keep winning. Hey, they made $8.2 million for the Missouri Valley Conference on this run they're on. How about that?
That is a good thing. Appreciate your time today, Gary. We'll do it again soon.
Great being on with you, TC. Thanks a lot.
That's Gary Rima, the voice of the UNI Panthers, home and away, each and every game, football and basketball, right here on 1700 and spring practice. Going on right now with the PCATs. We'll take a break. Back with more here. It's Jimmy B and TC on 1700 KBGG. All right, welcome back once again. More talk on the Final Four. I'll make my terrible predictions coming up a little bit later in the program today. But, well, somebody that actually knows what's going on in the world of hoops, it's Kevin Lehman as he joins us here today. What's happening, Kevin?
Hey, well, Trey, when you talk about this Final Four or this NCAA bracket, nobody's an expert. Because it has been a ups and downs, and what a great tournament we've had.
It's been kind of everything you asked for, and I think this Final Four is about perfect. You know, you got Villanova, who was number one for much of the year. You get Kansas, the name program, national brand, Blue Blood. You get Michigan, somewhat of an upstart, played well, though, at the end of the season. The Beeline storyline, still also a big brand. And then you get your underdog. You get your Cinderella story in Loyola. To me, this is exactly the way that a Final Four should be. I love these matchups. I like the way the bracket sets up. And can we please stop with the conversation of re-bracketing in the Final Four? That's not the way it works. You set a bracket beforehand and you go. You can't be redoing things in the Final Four. Have you heard people talking about that, Kevin?
I have, Trent, and I'm with you. In fact, seeds don't matter when you get like to the Final Eight. It just doesn't matter anymore because look how well Loyola's playing. They are not playing as an 11 seed.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you re-bracket them? And I like what we're seeing now. You've got Loyola and Michigan like playing in a mirror. They both are great offensive teams with spacing, shoot the three ball, and we don't give them enough credit for how good they are defensively. This game's going to be in the 60s. And when you look at Villanova and Kansas, that's going to be a up-and-down, high-scoring affair. That's going to be in the 80s or low 90s. So when they meet Monday, whoever comes out of the left side and the right side, you're going to have that great heavyweight fight, two contrasting styles on Monday night.
Should be a lot of fun, certainly, in that one. Looking forward to it. And, Kevin, let's start with game number one. It will be Loyola against Michigan. You've seen this Loyola team a lot throughout the years. Hey, just getting to a Sweet 16 was a huge accomplishment, but now to the Final Four. I don't think anybody could have dreamed of this. Even Sister Jean, her first bracket didn't have them playing here in the Final Four. They got some breaks. They made some plays late, tight games, and then dominated against Kansas State. But when you look at this Loyola team, is it a blueprint going forward for Loyola, for MVC teams, or is it just kind of one of those confluence of events where everything comes together and it's so difficult to recapture something like this?
Well, they've had three different players hit game-winning shots, starting with Dante Ingram and then Clayton Custer against Nevada and then Marcus Towns. So who's going to step forward in this game against Michigan, because I think this is going to come down to a last possession, last minute type of game. My concern with Loyola right now is they shot at 57% against a very good Kansas State defensive team.
Mm-hmm.
But Trent, you're playing in a dome, and we've seen teams not shoot well in Final Fours because of the atmosphere in the dome. So I have a concern, can Loyola continue to shoot as well as they have all season in this type of atmosphere? And my second concern is they turn it over 15 times against Kansas State. They can't do that against Michigan. Michigan is too opportunistic. So they've got to be able to cut down turnovers, and can they shoot the ball as well as they have? And this Michigan team, they're going to present some problems for whoever they play because of the ability to move Mo Wagner all over the court.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like Charles Matthews and Abdur Rahman. I think those guys are the X factors for Michigan.
Yeah, just this Michigan team and the way that they have completely revamped, you know, what they are. It's for years and years under Beilein, known as an offensive team, and they can score, but they're not going to get a whole lot of stops. And it's helped when you got a guy as athletic and as good a defender as Xavier Simpson out on the floor. They got some athletes. You mentioned Matthews, guys like that. But they have bought in on the defensive end. And bringing in that defensive coordinator to help out with that side of the basketball, it's something that, I don't know, I don't think there's many 65-year-old coaches that would be willing to do what John Beilein did this year. You got to give a ton of credit to him.
Well, no question. And John Beilein has never been an assistant coach. He's always been a head coach. That's one of the few people in our profession that has never come up the ranks and assisted someone else. So I've done some of his games and been at his shoot-arounds, at his practice sessions. This guy is a tactician at the offensive end, and his teams develop as the season goes on. They're always playing better at the end. And you know what else we have in this tournament, Trent? We've got each team has won their conference tournament. Remember we said before,
yeah,
hey, maybe you need to lose your conference tournament, get a little bit extra rest. And we also have four teams that no longer in this tournament is a one-and-done player. So we talk about blueprints for the future. Kentucky may have to look at this because the one-and-done players are not getting to the Final Four and not getting national championships.
No, that's very true. And, yeah, thinking about it now, both Michigan and Loyola did get a little bit of extra rest as their conference tournaments this year. Obviously, always the MVC, but also the Big Ten this year. But you're right. You know, Villanova, they ran through the Big East tournament, beat, what, Providence, I think it was, in that championship game to get there and get that automatic bid. So there isn't any blueprint. And that's the fun thing of college basketball. You know, we talk about all these different narratives, but when you get to a one-and-done scenario, there is no real thing. It's different every year. It's difficult to find where the upsets are going to come. And I guess that's why this tournament is so good each and every year, and this one maybe even better than most.
Well, it's reality TV. Every year is a different storyline. We have Sister Jean this year just captured the nation. And, you know, I flew in here with my son, and he had a Loyola hat on. We've got people in the airport tell him, he had a great hat. Hey, let's go Ramblers. And when has that ever happened before? Of course, there was a couple of Michigan people that gave him a hard time. But, you know, and another thing on this, Trent, look at a guy like Devontae Graham. And we talk about the one and done. Devontae Graham has accomplished everything at Kansas except a national championship. So I think when you have an older team like that, you've got some seniors with something left to prove, as Devontae Graham does. That gives them extra incentive versus the guys that are going to be there as freshmen and be gone to the NBA next year. That makes this tournament even more special.
It is absolutely great. All right, want to dig into the second matchup here, Kansas-Villanova. Both number one seeds, but different types of number one seeds. So many question marks throughout the year about this Kansas squad. Villanova, you know, had a couple of derailments. The loss to St. John's was head-scratching, though. They had just beat the Johnny's Duke before that, so maybe not as head-scratching. Still, Kansas getting here with this team. This is not the most talented Kansas team that we've seen. Your thoughts on the coaching job by Bill Self and getting this team to this point?
Well, look at Kansas. They lost at home twice this year. That's never happened in quite some time. And this is what Bill Self has done. This is a four-guard lineup around Azubuike. So they can shoot the three. And we hear the new term now in college basketball, 3 and D. You got to be able to shoot the three ball. You got to have guys that can defend on the perimeter. And what has happened with this Kansas team is Malik Newman has become the player that we thought he would be. Now, set out last year after transferring from Mississippi State, but he has carried this team. He's taken some pressure off Graham, and we knew what Savi Mikulic was giving him. And as a Buki inside, got to stay out of foul problems. You're playing against a Villanova team. I really think that Spellman and Paschal are going to be the keys for Villanova. Can they get Azubuike away from the basket and spread out this Kansas defense?
It's going to be difficult to do, no doubt. And, you know, there are some parallels to the last title team from Kansas. You look at that roster, another one that isn't at the forefront of Kansas rosters that we've seen in terms of NBA talent. It would happen in San Antonio. Do you believe in that stuff at all? You know, the matching up, whatever it is, location, different things, or do you stay away from trying to buy into those different things?
Well, it's 10 years ago, so how old was Devontae Graham when that happened? 12 years old? I think it's great for the media to try to pull those together, but it has very little factor in this game coming up. And, you know, again, leave at Kansas. This is a seven-man rotation that Bill Self uses. They have a short bench. I watched them practice in October, and that was Coach Self's big concern about developing depth. Billy Preston never got a play because of the issues that he had. Then they reclassified DeSosa. He's given them just enough minutes to really help them. And you know, him playing in the Big 12 tournament really helped this Kansas team. So this is a great story on Kansas, how this team's developed throughout the year. And now they got a chance to win a national championship. But I still have my bracket, Trent. I've had Villanova all the way through as my national champion, and I'm going to stick with them.
I'm right there with you. I've been on this team, and I've liked them from the get-go, right all the way back to the beginning of the season. We talk a lot about, obviously, Mikal Bridges and just how good he is and what they're able to do with some of those other guys. I want to get your thoughts on Amari Spellman, a guy that redshirted last season, which is crazy in its own right. A guy like Spellman, you see how good he is. Villanova, the way they've developed this program, and a guy like Spellman, who sits out last season, is able to roll right away, kind of a stretch four, if you will, inside, outside, does all those different things. Your thoughts on that and how Jay Wright can get guys to buy in and, hey, you need a redshirt year and then be ready to go.
Well, isn't that amazing? I think you're talking about blueprints for success. That's what you got to look at, what Villanova has done. They don't have one-and-done guys. They develop players. They'll sit them out and give them an extra year of maturation. And Spellman's not the only one that's done this for Jay Wright. So that's, you know, to watch what they've done there and the success that they have had makes you wonder again what I mentioned earlier about the one-and-dones. It may not be the way to go. Maybe you need one or two in there, but I really think when you look at what Kansas has done, Villanova's done this year, that you may see a change in how college basketball coaches recruit here in the future. But this Villanova team, you know, they can hit you in so many ways. You know, Bridges, Brunson, those guys are as good as they get in the backcourt. And this is another team. Three-point shooting, you don't have a true center. And when you said the word stretch four, I don't think there's anything, I don't think the power four position, I don't think it is still in college basketball. It has become a dinosaur. You got to be able to shoot the three ball at four positions.
Kevin Lehman joining us. We're taking a look at the Final Four. From the Final Four to a new hire. Drake welcomes in a new head coach as Darren DeVries gets the job after Nico Medved departs. Your reaction? DeVries, a guy that we've heard that name bandied about the last couple of coaching searches. Drake finally gets him to sign on the dotted line and has their man.
Well, I recruited Darren DeVries when I was assistant coach at UNI. I coached him for a couple years before I left for Omaha. This is a quality young man. I think it's a great hire by Brian Harden. And he was under the gun because this is his first big move as a new AD at Drake. And here's the challenge that Darren has. I had this issue when I took over the job at Nebraska Omaha. I was the third coach in 3 years. And you've got to really sell those players, Trent, because it's like being jilted by your high school girlfriend. They don't trust you, and they're not going to jump in with both feet. This is a Drake team that's had, this will be their fourth coach in 3 years. But I think that Darren can get this done. He's played under Eldon Miller. coached under Dana Altman and then these years under Greg McDermott. He knows the Valley because he played in it. And he also coached in it when he was at Creighton before they made their jump to the Big East. So, and he's got Iowa ties. I really think those are bonus points, playing the Valley and the ties to Iowa, because you look at Drake, you look at Northern Iowa, you look at Loyola. You got to have those core guys within a certain distance of your school, and that's what Northern Iowa's had great success with. If you look at Bohannon, Washburn, Jeremy Morgan, Ali Fropanesh, those are all Eastern Iowa guys. And Loyola's doing the same thing. They're getting public school guys, started with Milton Doyle and now Dante Ingram. So I think it's important for Drake to get a feel and get a guy that's really connected to the Iowa high school coaches.
Yeah, finding that connection, people that that you can get to buy in. And I think a very important part of this is DeVries, he understands the difficult nature of this job, that it's not just another mid-major, it's just not another private school out there. You look at the history and how difficult it is, and a guy going in there with his eyes wide open, I think that's going to help as well.
Well, anytime you take over a job, you have to understand the culture and the mission of that school, what their administration expectations are, and Darren does understand that. Coming from Creighton, a private school, some of the same things as far as academics, academic programs available, he'll be familiar with when he steps into Drake. And being an Iowa guy, you know, and I recruited Darren through high school. This is a great, solid family. The first time I met his dad was at a golf outing in Appleton. And Appleton had such a big fan base, we had to do it over a two-day period. But this guy comes up to me, Trent, and he says, "Hey, I got something for you." And I was with Kevin Boyle, the other assistant. Come out in the parking lot. We're kind of like, okay, who is this guy? And what's he got in the parking lot for us? Well, he pulls up, and he's got a trunk full of homegrown sweet corn.
Nice.
And he dumps it in our trunk and says, "This is for you guys." I mean, that's the type of family that it is. Darren was an eighth grader that time, and we knew nothing about him and learned much about him later. You know, Darren was also an all-state quarterback. He played for Ed Thomas in football, the late Ed Thomas. And Bill Dorn, his high school coach, he played for a powerhouse at Appleton Parkersburg.
Very good program. And football, basketball, really doesn't matter the sport. They build them well up there in Northeast Iowa. Kevin, enjoy your time with the boys this weekend. What do you guys do? What do you do on the boys' trip Final Four weekend?
Well, my three sons, this is always our time to get together. So we're going to end up in San Antonio, and we'll take in the practice sessions. That's always fun. We missed Sister Jean's press conference. I don't know if we could have fit in. That room was packed.
Yes.
As this woman has become a national star.
What a story. And you know her well. You got the personal connection, got to meet her last year. I love that. Hey, Kevin, as always, appreciate your time. Safe travels. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Trent, thanks for having me on, and you enjoy this tournament.
We definitely will, no doubt about it. Games start tomorrow about 5:30 with game number one, Loyola going up against Michigan, followed by Kansas and Villanova. You can catch the games right here on 1700. Our conversations presented by Washer Systems of Iowa with Kevin Lehman. Pressure washers, hey, looking to get them some things cleaned up around the house, around the farm, wherever it may be. Washer Systems of Iowa, Jeff Egli, big helper here of our high school sports and our basketball coverage all season long. A big thank you to Washer Systems of Iowa. We're coming back with more on the other side. We'll take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. It's Jimmy B and TC. All right, just a couple minutes to go. I promised you picks. I got you picks. It's Jimmy B and TC, Trent Condon, running solo with you here for the next couple of minutes. And, well, the Final Four is upon us, and it's time to get into it. Let's start with game number one, Michigan against upstart Loyola. And we've seen Cinderella stories before. We've seen VCU, George Mason. You can go way back. We've seen Butler. Now, Butler was able to break through, but for the most part, this is where the run ends. In this Final Four, playing in a dome for the first time for these Loyola guys. Remember in the past, you go back to when you and I made the Sweet 16, they played down at the dome in St. Louis. But now they have gone back to playing in arenas in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight in those regional final matchups. So this is going to be a different venue for Loyola. And I do believe it's going to catch up. I think Michigan is ready to go. I'm taking the favorite. I'm laying the points. Give me the Wolverines to get it done. Another pick, though, with that, Wolverines covering the 5. But also, I like the under in the first half. You know, seeing a 28-22 kind of score, something ugly like that. Believe the first half total I've seen, 59.5 out there, number like that. Shop around, try to find the best number, but look for the under in the first half of Loyola and with Michigan. Game number two, the spotlight game as well. Boy, is this going to be good. Kansas against Villanova. I've talked about it a lot. Sorry to annoy you. I have my Villanova ticket. It's at 22-1. I made it right before the season began, but I got to hedge here a little bit. And this has nothing to do with my betting, my hedging. I just got a sneaking suspicion that Kansas overlooked. And the way that they played, Mahi Luke, you know, the 4-5, I think they match up pretty well with this Villanova squad. Look, if Villanova hits 14 threes, it's over. Like, I mean, we get that. If Villanova's shooting lights out, it's game over. I think Kansas keeps it tight. I don't think they're going to win this game, but I do think they're going to keep it tight. So I'm going to grab the Jayhawks and grab the points. Villanova, Michigan for the national championship. That's my prediction, and we will play along with that coming up on Monday's show. Have a good weekend, everybody. Hope you enjoyed Good Friday. Hope you have a great Easter. Back at it on Monday. It starts at noon here with myself and Ken Miller and wraps up on your drive home from 4 until 6 with Jimmy B and TC. All the games here on 1700 as well. Again, if you're out and about, we have you covered with the Final Four game and, of course, the national championship on Monday. Great week. Had a lot of fun. We'll do it again next week here on 1700 KBGG, Real Sports Talk for Real Sports Fans.